Okay, my name is Ashley Conley, and I'm an epidemiologist for a local health department in Nashua, New Hampshire, and I'm going to be talking to you today about best practices and lessons learned from implementing a shelter surveillance program and tabletop exercise in our state. And I'm going to put a little plug, even though I don't have time to say it, the CSD Disaster Epi Subcommittee is having a roundtable directly after this session, so we'd love to have you there. So, in December 2012, our health department in Nashua and the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services convened a shelter surveillance work group to take a look at Capability 7 mass care, specifically function for monitor mass care population health. If you notice in here, the task is really oriented around conducting surveillance, specifically health surveillance in emergency shelters that revolve around illness, injury, and exposure. So shelter surveillance, if you're not familiar with this, is really about how do we detect outbreaks or increases in injury or exposure in shelters, and how do we do something about that? How do we monitor it, look for those outbreaks and changes, and then implement actions so we can stop it? Obviously, the goal is prevention, so we're always trying to prevent it. In New Hampshire, we kind of have three parts to our shelter surveillance program. The first is a guidance document, which includes three forms that are based from the CDC forms. If you go to the CDC website, and I have a link at the end of the PowerPoint, there's a whole series of forms that you can use. So we tailored a couple of these forms for use in our shelters. One is an environmental health assessment form, and the two others are an individual morbidity form and a summary form. So I don't have time to get into all of them, but we have three forms that we want to use in this in our program. We also include infection prevention and control practices in our guidance document, and it includes mentioning putting up posters, making sure that there's hand sanitizer, there's soap and paper towels, all those things that we need to do to prevent outbreaks. And then the last thing in here is about communications. How are we going to communicate what's happening in the shelter at that local level up to the state, and then how are we going to do something about it if something's going on in that shelter? Part two of our program is a training program. We were working with volunteers and health officers in our state to train them on what shelter surveillance is, how to do it, and what to do if something's going wrong. And then the third part is all about partnerships. Obviously, we couldn't implement a program like this without engaging all of our partners, including Homeland Security, the Red Cross, Medical Reserve Corps, and health officers and our public health professionals on the ground. So we've gone through this whole program for the past 2.5 years, and we've developed a lot of best practices and lessons learned. Starting a shelter surveillance program in the state is not an easy thing to do. If you're involved with planning for or implementing emergency shelters during disasters, you know there's a lot of factors. We have a lot of people with functional needs coming to your shelter, medications that they're bringing with them, pets, a whole slew of things are going on in that shelter. The longer the shelter's open and the more residents you have there, the greater potential there is for there to be a problem. So some of the things that we considered things that went really well in implementing the statewide program for surveillance is creating a guidance document that works for different shelters. It would be easier to say, here's the Red Cross document, this is just for Red Cross shelters. You know, but you can't, because not all of our shelters are Red Cross. We have town-run shelters, we have volunteer-run shelters, we have churches that set up shelters. So you have a whole slew of different organizations that are setting these up. So we needed a guidance document that could be used and applied to all those different organizations, which is not always easy to do, but it's so important. The second thing was training volunteers to be able to assist us with this. In New Hampshire, we only have two local health departments and then our state health department. We don't have a huge capacity of public health professionals that are going to be able to go out there in a disaster and go to these shelters to do surveillance. So we really rely on our Medical Reserve Corps volunteers and the health officers that we have in each town. And that involves a lot of training. We need to work with them and make sure that they understand what this is to be able to fill out those forms and really engage to prevent outbreaks. The third thing on here is really working with our emergency managers. It's not always easy, depending on what towns and what the personalities are or the politics are in those areas, to work with them on doing something like this. Emergency managers or those shelter managers in towns have a whole boatload of things they need to do when they open up a shelter. Doing surveillance is not on the top of their list, right? They want to think about cots, they want to think about all other things. Surveillance is not on there. So really being able to work with them. And in New Hampshire, we've done outreach to them, we've gone to their emergency preparedness conferences, we've done presentations to really try and engage them and have buy-in from them. So we did a tabletop exercise to test two things. The first was communication pathways. We all know that during emergencies, communication is the thing that we always have the most trouble with, and it's very complex. It's not as easy as a phone call up and a phone call down. There's lots of different pathways, and especially in disasters when phone lines go down, internet goes down, it becomes even more complex. So we tested that, and we also evaluated the guidance document that we put out. We engaged tons of partners when we did this, and some of the things that came out was our volunteers really needed to have more training on how to do interviewing. We gave them these forms, and we said, here, we just want you to go see, you know, who's having diarrhea in the shelter. Yeah, not really that easy of a thing if you've never done this before, so training was really important. We're developing a strike team, and other states have this model, where we could have FEs and public health nurses be able to deploy to shelters to help with this, and then we always, communications, you always have to work on it. Some lessons learned, a little bit more on communication pathways. This became really complex when you had emergency managers that were running shelters versus public health running shelters versus Red Cross running shelters. So that was something that we're still working on. You can't always rely on the internet during disasters. Also with small towns, they struggle to deal with putting up shelters. So if we want them to do surveillance, we're gonna have to do it for them. We're gonna have to create a system to do it for them. And they are always concerned about HIPAA. HIPAA is a big thing in their mind. They didn't know what to do with forms once they collected them. They didn't wanna hold them, but then some towns did wanna hold them. It's like you can never win, but being able to work with them was so important. And then being able to work with your volunteer agencies to include basic supplies for infection prevention, because it's not something that they normally keep in their trailers or in their bins when they deploy. So I am getting the little yellow light over here, so I just want to say my acknowledgments to our Shelter Surveillance Work Group, Homeland Security, and our State Health Department for all the work that they've done in putting together our guidance document over the past couple of years. Here's a list of resources that includes the CDC forms and an APIC document that talks about infection control and guidance in shelters during disasters. And I just want to mention that the CST Disaster Epidemiology Subcommittee does have a work group that's focusing specifically on shelter surveillance and how to create a guidance document to be able to help other state and locals implement this in their states. And there was a presentation, and the link is there. And there's my contact information.
Perfect.